Back now with more of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. You may know the beer that made Milwaukee famous, but how about the man? Reggie DeCrusher Lisowski was a pro wrestler from South Milwaukee whose career spanned from the 1950s through the 1980s. His tagline, "The Man Who Made Milwaukee Famous," was a nod to his character, which was pure Milwaukee.
DeCrusher was a blue-collar, beer-drinking man who ate Polish sausage and came on stage to polka music. This persona is part of what endeared him to Chris Smith, a South Milwaukee native and the organizer of a project seeking to build a statue in honor of Crusher.
Much to Smith's surprise, the project quickly reached its funding goal, and the statue is set to be unveiled in downtown South Milwaukee on June 8th of this year. Smith sat down with Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about Crusher's career and the early days of pro wrestling.
The thing about the Crusher was he reached his height of popularity and peaked just like all people do, wrestlers, celebrities, whatever. And he was winding down at the end of his career just as wrestling kind of got into the mainstream in the 80s with Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant and all those guys. And Crusher, you know, wrestled a little bit for the WWF right at the end of his career, part-time. But if the nationalization of wrestling would have occurred earlier, or if the Crusher somehow could have prolonged his career, you know, he was like Hulk Hogan before Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan actually learned from him. They came up in the same company, which was called the AWA, and it was based out of Minneapolis. And so they wrestled all over the place. Crusher wrestled all over the planet, but primarily it was a Midwest territory. And so that's why he's still very popular among the baby boomer generation, especially Milwaukee, because no matter where he wrestled, he was announced, you know, the man that made Milwaukee famous. And so he reached a pretty significant, at least in the Midwest and especially in Wisconsin, I mean, you could definitely consider him a celebrity at the time.
So he was the PBR of wrestlers.
Absolutely. I mean, he's very Milwaukee.
As someone who is not so familiar with, you know, the history of WWE, the history of wrestling, professional wrestling more generally in the U.S., what was it like in the 1960s, 1970s, compared to what we might think of more in the 80s and even now?
It's an interesting history. I mean, you go back to the 50s and wrestling was covered like any sport is now, in the newspapers, and people followed it like it was a legitimate sporting competition. Now we know, and most suspected, or maybe in the 50s, not most, but some suspected, that it was scripted, okay? And it still is. But, you know, wrestlers to this day do not appreciate anyone, you know, claiming that it's fake because the pain is real, and these are, and Crusher was a terrific athlete. His tag team partner, Dick the Bruiser, played for the Packers. So, I mean, they're real athletes. It's absolutely real. But, you know, the endings are and probably always were scripted. So back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, this was what they call the territorial days. And you had Vince McMahon Sr. in the Northeast, based in New York City. And you had someone called Vern Gagne, who was based out of Minneapolis, and he ran the AWA. And then you had the Mid-South, and you had the Houston wrestling. You had a bunch of territories, and they were very territorial, and they respected each other's territories. And the AWA, which covered the Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, was very successful. A lot of the wrestlers that the younger generations have heard about, it wouldn't be unusual for them to come through the AWA, like Hulk Hogan, Big John Studd, Bobby the Brain Heenan, Mean Gene Okerlund. They all came through the AWA. And so what ended up happening in the 80s, Vince McMahon Sr., who ran what was first called the WWWF, but then they shortened it to just the WWF, he sold the company to his son, Vince McMahon Jr., and Vince McMahon Jr. did something that no one ever did and that really the other promoters didn't like. He basically bought airtime in every territory. Just long story short, nationalized wrestling. And it was a success. The other territories fought him, but he was making enough money that he could lure the big stars like Hulk Hogan from the AWA. And then it just, in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, it got extremely popular. They teamed up with MTV, did something called Rock and Wrestling, and at the time, very popular celebrities got involved, like Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper. And so it just kind of took off, and the territories kind of died. And so Crusher was absolutely one of the most popular wrestlers in the territories. And unfortunately, when Vince McMahon Jr. kind of took over, he did bring Crusher on, but it was a very part-time basis because he was just older, and he just was at the end of his career at that point. So I also work kind of for the city of South Milwaukee, where Crusher was from, and so decided something needed to be done about this because someone who was so popular and so successful, but also on the other side of the coin, away from wrestling, by all accounts, just a very good and generous human being, I figured, like, you know, if we don't do something, my kids aren't going to know who he is. And my kids' kids certainly won't know who he is. So hopefully with this project we're working on here, that will maintain his memory.
Yeah. To just go back a little bit to, you know, the kinds of personas that you get with wrestling. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you know, in the 1950s, it was regarded as this kind of, you know, very real sport. Mm-hmm. But there is that scripted element of it now and in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the personas are a big part of that and a big part of what really made the Crusher mm-hmm. who he was. Can you give us some, you know, he was the Milwaukee guy. Can you give us some examples of how that manifested in his character?
Absolutely. I mean, your character, you know, and wrestlers now call it your gimmick, okay? Mm-hmm. You have to have something that gets the crowd interested in you. You know, wrestler's worst nightmare is you're out there, you're getting announced, and the crowd does nothing. They want you either booing or they want you cheering, okay? Either one is good. You know, so over the decades, wrestlers come up with a character. Andre the Giant was the big, mean, nasty giant. You know, before that, he was a good guy too. But, you know, you had cowboys. You had a guy from Canada who called himself Rowdy Roddy Piper, who wore a kilt and acted like he was from Scotland. And you had people in masks, and you had people who were like, you know, voodoo priests. You had Native American characters, you know. So Crusher's character, if you will, I don't know how much different it was from who he was as a person, because he would come out to polka music. He would call himself the man that made Milwaukee famous. He would do interviews and talk about, you know, back in Milwaukee, he won the crown of Mr. Saloon 10 years in a row, and that's because he could eat the most polar sausage and drink the most beer and throw the drunks out of the saloon and do the polka. And very famously, he would say his workout consisted of running along the shores of Lake Michigan with a keg of beer on his shoulder. And when his workout was over, the keg was empty. You know, so that was his character, and it was probably very much inspired by who he really was, because he grew up in South Milwaukee, went to South Milwaukee High School. He raised a family there, and I work in that town. I work for the city, and if I had a dollar for every Crusher story I've heard from people there, I'd have a lot more money than I do now.
You know, you mentioned the beer barrel, running mm-hmm. around with a beer barrel, and he himself was a very barrel-chested yeah. kind of guy, not exactly who you would look at and say, oh, that man's a wrestler.
Yeah, he didn't have the physique of like a bodybuilder like some wrestlers do, especially in the 80s, a lot of them did. But he was built, and he was thick, and he was strong. And in this process here of creating this statue, I've worked closely with the Crusher's daughters, which has been very much a joy for me. And Crusher measured all his measurements, his biceps, his chest, and they kept that. And so the statue is actually going to mirror that. And he was a big, stout guy. Now, his physique changed as he got older a little bit, but he was always a big, strong man.
for someone who was able to have a very long career, considering what his career was, you have to imagine he was very fit.
Right. And before he could wrestle full time, and before he started wrestling, he, you know, was a blue collar worker. He was a bricklayer. He had a bunch of jobs that were all very physical. And then he became successful enough wrestling that he could do that full time.
So you mentioned you've been working with his daughters mm-hmm. to get this statue built. You know, what is that process like actually getting, I mean, first of all, getting the place to put the statue, getting, I'm assuming there's permits involved with that, mm-hmm. and then getting really the momentum in the community to get this thing built and building it.
Well, you know, going back to raising the money, I mean, I talked to a number of different places that could create the statue, and pretty much my target was $40,000. And honestly, I anticipated this being something that would kind of just mirror my career. I'm 40. I just turned 40. And I thought, over the next 20, 25 years, you know, I'll try to do this. And then hopefully, by the time I retire, I'll have enough money that I can kick in whatever we need and then get this thing done. And, you know, it just goes to show that still, you know, I mean, we're 14 years after his death. He died in 2005. How much people still love him. I launched the website in very late December, after Christmas 2017, and we were fully funded by March. So 3 months, basically. And we actually got more donations than we even thought we needed. And so then the process of actually creating the statue, we picked a very reputable firm in Milwaukee called Vanguard Sculpture Services. The owner actually went to South Milwaukee High School, knew the Crusher's daughter, so it was kind of very cool. And I've had a lot of people in the city come up to me and say, oh, you're so popular for doing this. Because it's a very, I mean, in 2019, 2018, pretty much it doesn't seem like people can agree on anything. But social media, you got to really search for a negative comment about the Crusher statue. Okay. We're not asking for public money. It was all privately funded. And pretty much the response has been super positive. And so I've had people come up to me and say, whoa, you're very popular in South Milwaukee right now because you're behind this. And I would always reply to them, yeah, but if the statue turns out and looks like crap, my name will be mud. But very recently we have seen, and the Crusher's daughters and myself have seen, the final clay sculpture, and we gave it the green light to go forward to make the mold, to get, you know, whatever this process is, to have it made out of bronze. And I am no longer worried about my name being mud over this, at least, because it looks wonderful.
So it's going to be erected pretty soon, right?
Yeah, June 8th.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What are your plans moving forward for the statue?
It's very close. I mean, we're within a couple months probably of it being finished. And then June 8th is the date that we picked for the unveiling. There's a spot for it in the city, kind of right in the heart of the city. South Milwaukee does have like a natural downtown, and their main street is called Milwaukee Avenue, and it's right 11th and Milwaukee. And so once the snow melts, if that ever happens, we have a bunch of companies that have agreed to donate labor and materials to turn the little parcel that the city has dedicated to where the statue will go. They're going to turn it into like a miniature park. The local bricklayers union, a big landscaping company called KEI Landscaping, and a company called Miller Monuments. They're all coming together, totally volunteer, and they're going to turn this little parcel, which right now is part of a parking lot, into a park. And it's going to be a brick plaza. And the part where the statue is going to go is going to be in the middle of a 20 by 20 brick square, which is the same dimensions of a wrestling ring. So it's going to be a very, I think, cool little spot for the statue to call home.
Nice. Well, I look forward to seeing it. And thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Smith is the organizer of the Crusher statue, which will be unveiled on June 8th of this year. Smith spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. There is more information about the project at WUWM.com.